This is Pop Health Week on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm Greg Masters, Managing Director of Health Innovation Media and the producer co-host of the show. Joining me in the virtual studio is partner, co-founder, and principal co-host Fred Goldstein, President of Accountable Health, LLC. Pop Health Week engages industry leadership and stakeholder voices spanning payer, provider, patient, vendor, and regulatory communities in population health best practices and strategy. To create private label thought leadership content, connect with us via www.popupstudio.productions or follow and direct message me on Twitter at Greg Masters, MPH, and that's Greg with two G's. On today's episode, our guest is heart-centered and mission-driven John Casillas, founder and executive director of Global Rise. Global Rise is a nonprofit organization building digital food systems in sub-Saharan Africa, India, and Guatemala, providing a platform of hope for extremely poor communities to tackle disease, poverty, climate change, and other critical themes. Previously, John served as Global Health IT Fellow for the World Bank and Senior Vice President at HIMSS after unification of the Medical Banking Project and HIMSS. Do follow his work at Global Rise via www.globalrise.org. And with that introduction, Fred, over to you.
Thanks so much, Greg. And John, welcome to Pop Health Week.
Thanks much, Frank. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, it's really great to get you on. As you know, we met at HIMSS. It was a fascinating session in the morning, and you presented, and it really intrigued me, the work you're doing. So if you could start, just give a short introduction to your background, then we'll get into some of the cool stuff you're doing.
Thanks. That was a good session for us. We were able to get our story out, which is, at that point, you know, when I was talking to the Global Health Equity Symposium, I was trying to represent the Bukanzo people who we are serving now, and their plight. This is a segment of society that the world has truly forgotten, and so that's sort of where we're working today.
And a little bit of your background, the work you did before you started this.
Yeah, I started a think tank called the Medical Banking Project, which was focused on helping banks and healthcare technology groups to integrate their service offerings more tighter. It led to policy discussions around HIPAA, for which we were pretty much well known in the industry. We were acquired by HIMSS, and at that time, I was asked to form a relationship with the World Bank. The World Bank had taken a strong interest in medical banking, created a fellowship, and then I became a fellow at the World Bank to help them with health information technology implementations in various developing countries. And that's really where I got the taste of being in a developing country, which, you know, a lot of people might run away from that. And certainly that was in my mind, but I felt, I guess, a tug to see if there was anything we can do in these poorest of the poor areas. And that led to eventually to Global Rise.
Right. And Global Rise is just fascinating, as I heard what you were doing and how you were trying to solve a problem. And I thought, wow, this is really like a population health effort, because you're going after some of the early determinants of people's health. You know, their ability to make a living, their ability to get food and eat appropriately, and all of those things. And so why don't you talk a little bit about Global Rise and what you're doing with that?
Yeah, and so amazing, because, you know, when I started Global Rise, I joined a board of a nonprofit organization, and they had built four orphanages in India. So they asked me to come over for a strategy meeting. And during the strategy meeting, we nixed bringing a nutritionist over because we couldn't afford it. And I found that most orphanages in the world can't afford to have a professional nutritionist look at the kids. So that's where the nucleus of Global Rise started. Why not form a nonprofit that could help with orphanages with this? What we found, though, is that orphanages are increasingly seen as foreign silos of donations, and the people in the community get jealous of the orphans and the orphanage staff. So it's important to integrate the orphanage with the community. So we started to move from developing an orphanage food system, which was very controllable, to a community nutrition program. And when you talk about community nutrition, now you're talking about all those things that you just talked about. And, you know, for being a medical banking aficionado, if you will, from the Medical Banking Project, coming into that world was a completely, completely new thing for me. And we had to just look at, okay, how are we going to really, on a long-term basis, affect community nutrition?
And so I understand, as I understand, you ultimately were able to work and get some nutritionists into these centers. Is that right? Through shared work or something like that?
Well, I actually reached out to a nutritionist when I started Globalize, and she became a part of the Globalize family. And then we have a global international nutritionist that sits on our board who has done community nutrition work already. She brought in a group from University of Northern Florida that are focused on the Center for Nutrition and Food Security. And the president of this center became the president-elect of, now she is the president-elect of eatright.org, which is the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics. She brought in a whole slew. I had a whole army of 16, you know, nutritionists looking over our shoulder. And you know, nutrition is a very local thing. But having this sort of expert layer on top of what we were doing really helped to solidify our programming. So the thing that I brought to the table from my board, which mostly were technology experts, was innovation. So we're bringing innovation into this idea of how do we create a sustainable community nutrition program. And when you look at how the people live in the mountains, that's when your heart leaps. So, you know, there is no roads. There's a spider web of muddy paths. We're talking about in the mountains of Southwest Uganda, where orphans are coming in that have been deserted through war, famine, through disease, and they're coming in. They're living with extended families, maybe, in adobe huts. There's 5.6 children per household.
Wow.
They're smallholder farmers. They make less than $1.90 a day. We estimate that they make about 82 cents a day. They're mostly women-led households. I would say about 80%, based on our survey. We did a survey. We really, to understand the dynamics around eating and nutrition, we did a survey. The survey took us about 2 months to design with all these nutritionist helps. And then we implemented it. So the implementing of the survey is what really drove new ideas and thinking, because we were walking what they were doing every day. We were experiencing what they were doing every day under the African sun, going to a house using technology, you know, like a GPS to lock into the households. We selected a statistically significant sampling based on the formulas that they use in the nutrition world. And it was comprised of 1,650 households altogether. I'm telling you, to walk up and down those hills was just, it just took the life out of me. They live all the way on top of the hill, right, in this adobe hut, and they have about an acre and a half each of land that they farm. And they'll take whatever they can carry on their heads, on their arms, along with the baby on their back, down to the market and sell.
And how far is that market?
It's you know, there's one study that was done recently, 2019. We think it's too much, but they conclude that it takes 5.5 hours for the average person to walk to that market one way. Okay.
So each day, or when they're going to take food to the market to sell it, they load it up themselves, on themselves, and walk 5.5 hours to then go and sell it, and then have to walk back.
We calculated 3 hours with this study.
Regardless, that's a chunk of walking. Oh my God.
Yeah, and so you can see, just based on mobility, how these guys are just locked. They're locked. They don't. They can only make so much selling one jackfruit, right, which is the primary thing that they sell. Uh-huh. And it's sold for about 3,000 Uganda shillings, which is about 80 cents. You know, what can you do? I mean, when you look at that environment, how they live, the fact that there's a 50% stunting rate in this area. And, you know, our mission is to eliminate stunting. We want a world of healthy kids. That's our vision.
Uh-huh.
And we had gathered the community through focus groups and through large gatherings, actually, to determine what is it that they felt would be the number one thing to address to move their community out of poverty. And it was unanimous. It was nutrition. Mm-hmm. and trying to eliminate stunting. So with the community, we're thinking, okay, so how do we do this thing? At the end of the day, we decided that we could overlay what they're doing and accelerate it using drones. Walmart has actually just announced using drones to deliver produce. The company that's involved with that, the person that's involved with that, is now helping us too with this issue. So basically, the drones will pick up the food instead of the woman walking. It'll come down to the market when the food is taken off the drone. The money automatically transacts so that they have it directly on their phone. There's no cash. It's completely cash free. It's like an Uber in the sky. We did the economics on it. We think that we can, at a minimum, increase their income to $2, about $2.80 a day at a minimum, by accelerating product to market and by reducing food waste. So what happens is they realize that it takes so long for them to sell one jackfruit, they'll just leave the jackfruit sitting on the tree. They won't be able to carry them. So there's waste that we're capturing.
Yes, and I assume that even the folks where the market is could use more food too. So by doing this, you can help that group as well?
There is a need for more food. There is a need to formalize the marketing transaction.
Uh-huh.
in this platform. So there might be a manufacturer that's producing jackfruit juice, you know, which is,
yeah.
So we can organize that and implement it as a contract on the platform.
Wow.
But the first thing is just getting it to the market.
Oh, absolutely.
The market is very active. Very active, and you're right. I mean, there's a need for many things.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think of all the spin-off benefits of that. So you now have this woman who was taking this food for 5 hours, whatever, a day, or 8 hours, whatever it might have been, who now doesn't have to make that walk and can do stuff back in the community, whether it be with the kids, education, other work. It's got to have huge spin-offs, I would think.
Exactly. So we used a system of systems approach.
Uh-huh.
And we were guided in this type of thinking through the Rockefeller Foundation. We actually entered our idea into a global vision prize, Food Systems Vision Prize, and one semifinalist standing. There were 76 semifinalists from 1,320 global submissions. And this is from institutes, governments, from people that have been doing this for a long time. And we're just coming in kind of fresh to this. They love the idea. But the thing is, what we're doing is we're connecting the platform to village training. And we're spending a lot of time right now on village training. So what is village training? Village training has three components: family nutrition, okay? Soil fertility, which is very important in the mountains because of mm-hmm. climate change, and financial planning. So we're developing these modules, and before people can actually take advantage of the platform, so they don't have to walk, they have to go to village training, and the village training is ongoing
uh-huh.
In our design. So what we have to do is we have to link the village training to the platform so that people progressively are learning at the household level to eat better and to use money wisely and to tend their soil better. And that's what we're in the process of prototyping today.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pop Health Week on Healthcare Now Radio. Our guest is John Casillas, founder and executive director of Global Rise, a nonprofit organization building digital food systems in sub-Saharan Africa, India, and Guatemala to tackle disease, poverty, climate change, and other critical themes.
So it's like a comprehensive approach. It's not just, hey, we're going to fly these things back and forth and move your product. We're going to talk about what you're eating in the house and help you understand that. We're going to help you with the financial issues that you'll now face and help you continue to be productive with your current gardens. So, I mean, it's really fascinating. And, you know, I was originally looking at this and saying it's great from a population health perspective, and it's good to hear Walmart's doing it and others, and I hear we may have pharmacy delivered that way and stuff. But it's really looking at technology to solve a most fundamental problem. And when you think of social determinants of health and the basic underlying issues that drive healthcare costs in the long term. So it's really neat to hear how you've sort of structured this that actually does take the newest tech with this education approach to solve the bases, the foundations we need to fix in order to improve overall health, longevity, and livelihood, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, in this area, they really could use it. Like I said, the people are forgotten by the world. They have no one, I mean, no one helping them. And even the government that I spoke to the mayor, and he's like, you know, John, this is such a pressing issue for us. The poorest of the poor. So Uganda is one of the top three poorest countries in the world. We're right at the corner of Uganda and DRC, which is the poorest country in the world, okay? So now we're dealing with two of the poorest countries in the world in that population segment with a group that lives up in the mountains that have no roads. They don't have access to electricity. And the government's going, okay, they're scratching their heads. They thought at first, let's send mules up there. And the mules could help to carry. I mean, it was a big research study that was done, and they decided, okay, we're going to send donkeys, okay? So they tried sending donkeys and people started hunting them for food. So they stopped the program. So I have an ongoing sort of email with people that are helping with the drones, and it's called Donkeys or Drones.
Wow. And I know you also mentioned that they're in these mountains and right across the border, there's essentially a war going on.
That's right. And so in the same mountains, the Rwenzori Mountains run 75 miles long, and they drain into Lake Albert, which, by the way, is the source of the Nile River that goes all the way to Cairo. Okay. So these bodies of water come together up there. It's also considered the Great Lakes of Africa, where we're at. On the DR side of the Rwenzori Mountains in North Kivu Province, South Kivu Province, down to Goma, there are warring groups, and there's an estimate of over 100 of these different warring groups that are fighting proxy battles and other types of war in the Congo. And you know, we are not equipped to work in a war zone. If our place became a war zone, we would have to leave. Fortunately, except for one pretty bad incident, where the president of Uganda had to put down a potential uprising in that community, Kasese, killing 150 people. There's stability there. So we're with them. We stand with those people. And every time we come, they realize that we're a serious player for them. And we want to take, so we call this whole thing a digital food system. It's anchored on good nutrition and using good food as medicine. Mm-hmm. And then it moves into digital health tools. We actually are going to be implementing a health record as part of our program. So there are digital health aspects about the digital food system that are very important. And that's why HIMSS, by the way, is now supporting us. This on this mission, which is coming up starting in June, we're going to be back in Africa. We're going to create a thing called Digital Health Week. So we'll be scoping it and really laying the groundwork for in 2023 having a health clinic as part of the as part of this program. We have a 5 to 10 year program here. At the same time, we realize that it has to be replicable to get grant funding, and getting the grant funding and other types of funding, like having the government actually invest in this, is important. So we are scoping another area in India. We actually, and our modus of operation is we start with an orphanage. It's a very symbiotic relationship. We help them with their orphanage food system, bring in professional nutrition expertise, which is the first thing that I spoke about, which kind of generated the idea of Globalize, making sure that there's good nutrition expertise in the orphanage. But then we learn the community so that we can evolve a digital food system in that community as well. Mm-hmm. So we want to do that three times in Africa, in India, and Guatemala. These are red stunting zones. There's over 140 million stunted children in the world. Most of them are in India. And then we want governments to look at those as demonstration projects and then take digital food systems to other mountainous areas or other geographically difficult areas in the world. Mm-hmm. So there's 300 million food insecure people living in the mountains today.
Do you think the system, as you're structuring it, like the one in Africa, could be self-sustaining at some point by moving enough food to do that versus having to, ultimately you got to get it kicked off and there's a lot of investment, I'm sure. But is that something you see as possible, or maybe some government support ongoing is what you're looking for?
Well, first of all, we wouldn't do it if we didn't think it was going to be sustainable, because the direction from the board is it must be sustainable. So looking at it, if you take the economics, how many households are there, what they farm, we in our survey, we looked at the top 10 things that they sell. Uh-huh. And we went to the market and priced out all those things. You put all the data together and you could have a $32 million economy in the mountains by implementing this system. Wow. So our pitch to the government is, this is a great tax revenue source. It's a great way to develop the area. By the way, Uganda placed number one in the MasterCard Woman Entrepreneurship Index in the world. So their women are more entrepreneurial minded than any other place in the entire world. Okay.
Wow.
So you give them a platform like this and let them grow. Let them form cooperatives to meet certain things. There's world-class safaris nearby that the drones could fly food to the safaris instead of the safaris constantly sending trucks out to the farmers market. We could fly in fresh food. Uganda is the third largest refugee hosting country in the world. So there's refugee populations, which we create new markets. There's the lake, the Great Lakes aspect. We could create a whole new market with the fish there. So we're just gonna let we give the platform to them, and then they're gonna take it the rest of the way. It's an exciting thing to watch. Mm-hmm. If we want to prototype it, and that's it. We want the government to step in and say, okay, this is really working, then let the government scale it. That's
right.
That's sort of our plan.
Right. Plant the seed and then let them continue to grow it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. No. And I think about that, and I know we had discussions before this call about, rural United States. You think of some of the places in the Mississippi Delta or rural North Dakota, even places like that, where things like this may be really unique ways to solve many of these problems we have. I also find it fascinating that you said we're going to build this digital health platform on top of this thing, which is, it's not just the money exchange, which I imagine was complicated enough, but getting that digital health platform has got to be something that's going to be really interesting to see what it does and where it goes.
Yeah, the population health aspect of it is very important, as you know. I mean, we have to be able to show results. If you're going to move a community from 50% stunting to healthy, you need to have evidence, an evidence base to show that that's actually being done. And so the digital health component is critical. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another piece that we have in our design, which is sometimes when you see children that are severely acute malnourished or SAM, they may need to go to the hospital. But there was a study in India where they used ready-to-use therapeutic foods, or RUTFs.
Uh-huh.
And we have this idea. So RUTFs can be designed in universities in Harvard or Cambridge or wherever, you know, where they've already studied the problematic, and they can pack, they can create a
meal packs or
the
something.
Recipe.
Yeah.
Okay. Those recipes, by the way, can be sent digitally to a 3D food printing lab in
wow.
Kisesi, Uganda. Okay. And we can 3D food print the food, the RUTFs, and then use drones to send them to the households.
Oh, that's so fascinating.
It's a concept.
Wow. You know, well, it's been, you know, John, it's really been a pleasure getting you on to discuss this. I'd love to get you back on in a while and hear how it's going and what you've been able to accomplish. It's fantastic. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we'd love to follow up with you once we have some results.
Fantastic. And back to you, Greg.
And thank you, Fred. That is the last word on today's broadcast. I want to thank John Casillas, founder and executive director of Global Rise, for his time and insights today. Do follow his work at Global Rise via www.globalrise.org. And finally, if you're enjoying our work at Pop Health Week, please like the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Share with your colleagues and do consider subscribing to keep up with new episodes as they're posted. We stream live on Healthcare Now Radio weekdays at 5:30 a.m., 1:30 p.m., and 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and for you left coasters, 2:30 a.m., 10:30 a.m., and 6:30 p.m. Pacific. For Pop Health Week, my co-host Fred Goldstein, this is Greg Masters saying, please stay safe, everyone. Bye now.